Marine, who is a young girl, the daughter of a fisherman, and the fishing boat that she's on is sunk by the Nazis. She perishes, and then she wakes up in the arms of Neptune, who tells her that he's brought her back to life, and then he makes her the queen of this undersea kingdom.
Sort of shades of the Little Mermaid. There's definitely a Hans Christian Andersen vibe going on there.
But very much so. But then there's a... I didn't quite understand why there's a strange twist in that she's the only female. In the first story, she is brought back to life. She doesn't seem to miss her old life on the surface. And then they bring her to the deathbed of the current queen of the city, who perishes, and then they crown Maureen as the queen of this city and sole female. It's Father Neptune and all these various male sea creatures.
Maybe this ran through mainstream comics as a whole, or maybe this is something that's especially strong in the comics that you've collected here in Divas, Dames, and Daredevils. But I did notice a reliance on mythology and fables that seemed to be more a part of the canon of Western civilization back then, taught in schools more often. Greek mythology, we have Diana the Huntress showing up in one of the comics. Mother Hubbard is a heroine in one of the comics. And that interested me. That seemed to be something that you just wouldn't see anymore in contemporary comics.
Yeah, very much so. I think all of those classical stories and myths and fairy tales were very much a part of culture at that time. If you look at old kids' books, there were always collections of Greek myths and fairy tales, and I remember learning all that when I was going to school. There is a character, Diana the Huntress, in this book, and she was brought back in the context of the war. And it was interesting because she's one of the few classical female goddesses that made the jump to comics. When you look at comics, there have been various comic book adaptations of Hercules and characters like Samson, Vulcan, but very few of the female goddesses made the jump to comics. There was a Venus in the late 40s, but she was more sort of a glamour character. But Diana the Huntress seemed like would be a natural. And in this, there's an added element with the war effort because there is this divine right on the part of the allied powers, and that Zeus summons Diana and he tells her that the Olympian gods have to take on the Nazis, to defeat the Nazis, to free their beloved Greece. So you see all these stories where Diana is usually enlisting her fellow Olympians to go down to fight the Nazis in Greece. There's one where she fights the Turks. And usually at the end, you see her and Zeus with some Greek freedom fighters, and the Olympians are going back off into the sky, and they tell the freedom fighters, whenever you need us, we'll be here. It makes for some interesting kind of cultural mashups, in the sense that the first story, her first appearance, she comes to Greece, and then she's helping the Greeks recover an icon that was stolen from a Greek Orthodox church by the Nazis. So there's this weird thing of this Christian symbol, but she is from the religion that predated that. But then there's still this idea that Christian symbol has some power, and there's not this strange clash of these two belief systems. This is very strange. There's one where she fights this Muslim Turkish warlord, but she's wearing this short little Greek tunic, and she's fighting with a bow and arrow. There's some interesting cultural clashes that I'm not sure if the writers and artists that were working on these were even aware of.
Well, my favorite part of this one story with Diana the Huntress is when Eris or Discordia goes and propositions some Nazis to distract them, so they're all completely smitten with her. And there's a hint of sexual allure in there, as there are in so many of these comics of the time.
Yeah, it's funny because Diana enlists Discordia to get some information from these Nazis, and they kind of laugh about it after the fact about how stupid these guys are and how easily they were beguiled by her. And she's kind of portrayed almost like a Bobby Soxer with like a tight sweater and a skirt.
You're listening to Words and Pictures on KBOO. I'm your host, SW Conser. And my guest today is Mike Madrid, the author of Divas, Dames, and Daredevils, a compilation called The Lost Heroines of Golden Age Comics.
And I'm Lynn, and I am here with Will, and we are here to get you to donate to KBOO today. And you know what you get? And here, it's like we were talking, this is like the best Valentine's present. If your Valentine likes graphic novels, get them a copy of Divas, Dames, and Daredevils by Mike Rodrid for your $60 contribution to KBOO today. It is a great idea. It's $5 a month. You don't even have to pay for it all at once. It is these characters are great. One of my favorites is the attorney, woman attorney, and I can't remember her name now because I have read the book, heroine. It's a great read, and you know, Exterminating Press and Todd Davis have just been incredibly generous. They love KBOO. That's one reason they always contribute books for us. So give us all some love back. Divas, Dames, and Daredevils today by Mike Rodrid for a $60 minimum donation. If you like graphic novels, this is like the perfect Valentine's present, don't you think, Will?
I couldn't agree more. And I think it's also a great gift for somebody who doesn't like comics or graphic novels because they don't understand them. They think it's just a boy thing, but it's not. I love comic books and graphic novels, and I think some of the best books I've ever read were written in those graphic novels, including Watchmen, obviously. But this is a fascinating exploration about the history of comic books and the fact that the female presence in comic books is vital and has been around for many, many years. It's not just Cherry, Pop-Tart, and Wonder Woman. There's all sorts of female comic book characters that you can learn from thanks to this Mike Rodrid book and thanks to SW Concert's terrific show that you're listening to right now. So if you want to show your support for that, and I know you do, please pick up your phone and dial 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO. Or you can walk in the front door here and be greeted by our receptionist and drop off a donation. And this book is only $60. One-time donation or $5 a month if you want to spread it out, and you could become a sustaining member, and that would be terrific, and you'd be keeping this terrific radio station open and the electric bill paid.
And we want to thank Terry, who renewed from Fresh Prairie, Phil from Gladstone, and Susan, who renewed from White Salmon out there on the prairie, as Garrison Keillor would say. And one of the things, you know, this is a unique show. I hear when Conch interviews people, they go, wow, a show about comic artists? That doesn't happen. And I have yet to see another one or hear another one. Maybe there is one, but this is a unique opportunity for you. It's really a great opportunity to get a fabulous graphic novel. The number is 877-500-5266, and you can contribute to KBOO at the same time. What could be better than that? I can't think of a thing. But anyway, let's go back to that interview.
Well, these comics and Divas, Dames, and Daredevils, most of them were written and illustrated during a period of American history that was a little bit hard-bitten. It was the 30s and 40s. Mm-hmm. There was the Depression followed by the war years. Mm-hmm. And so many of these comics have adult themes that wouldn't necessarily go over today. Even the Cavalier smoking would certainly be banned nowadays. But you think back to, say, the movies of the era where you had a lot of gangster movies, where you had a lot of war movies, and comics at the time were being read by grown-ups, were being read by GIs as well as kids.
Absolutely. And I think especially in the very early days, and the comics as we know them kind of started in the late 1930s. Throughout the mid-30s, they would collect newspaper comics of the day. But it wasn't until the late 30s that they started actually producing original material for the comics. And it was a new medium, and they were just trying to kind of feel their way through this new medium and figure out who their audience was. And I think at that time, I don't think they were necessarily thinking that it was going to be mainly children reading these comics. Many of them were more adult, and a big audience during the war years were servicemen. They would send comics to servicemen, which is why during the war years you get so many sexy women filling the comics, because they filled that quota for pinups as well, along with adventure stories. But a lot of the stories, especially the ones from the very early years around 1940, do seem very, very experimental. And the women that are in these stories are incredibly powerful compared to what we have seen in more recent decades. I think there's this idea that, and it's, you know, there's something to it as well, that even heroic women are often portrayed as less than the men. The men are always more powerful. The women are always powerful, but they're not as powerful. It's something that I didn't never understood when I was growing up, when I would read these stories, and they're so fantastic on every other level but that. You know, you have these stories where someone can live under the ocean, and you've got someone who can fly into space. It's so unlike our world, except for the fact that the women aren't as strong as the men. I never quite understood, like, why can't it be completely fanciful on every level? But in these very early stories, they are. They've, like, there's this one, the first character who actually had superpowers is a character named Fantoma. Fantoma, the mystery woman of the jungle. And she's described as being the most remarkable woman that's ever lived in the universe. She is this beautiful blonde woman who lives in the jungle, looks out for the peaceful jungle kind, the animals and the natives living in the jungle. We never know how she gets her powers, but she lives in the secret observatory and she's observing what's going on in the jungle. And when some outside force comes to threaten the jungle, she transforms into the most fearsome kind of angel of death with a skull face, and she is the law, and she smites these foes down like the hand of God. It's terrifying. And she can do literally anything. She can fly into space. She can reshape reality. She sends people to the moon with a thought. I mean, and she is unstoppable, and she cannot be deterred from her divine wrath and judgment. And you know, we haven't seen anything like that in comics. I mean, there was a character named the Phoenix in the 70s and 80s in the X-Men comics, and everyone thought, my God, it's so incredible. We've never seen a woman that has so much power in comics. And she was fantastic, but people didn't realize that 40 years before there were characters that were like that had this almost infinite power. But it was a very small window in which they existed.
And one of the things that you point out in your notes on the history of these comics is that a number of these superheroines would transform into something uglier than their normal persona, which certainly would not be something that would happen in today's comics.
Yeah, I mean, we're used to seeing, you know, the kind of our image of the comic book heroine is someone that's impossibly perfect, you know, beautiful, incredible athletic body, oftentimes unrealistically drawn, and oftentimes scantily dressed. And one of my favorite characters is a character named the Spider Widow, and she was a beautiful athletic debutante, but when she decided to do her part to fight the Nazis and to fight criminals, she dresses up like an old witch. She puts on this sort of a hideous mask and kind of a witch hat, and she has fantastically trained Black Widow spiders that she carries with her, and she used fear as her weapon. She would scare the daylights out of these criminals, and then she would unleash her spiders on them. And she wasn't beautiful. She presented this fearful, kind of ugly image, but it's so novel. And the, on top of the fact that she's really funny, and so many of these women in these stories are funny. They've got really sharp wits. They come from that era in movies, as you were mentioning before, where you had
the
these kind of
comedies and the Howard Hawks movies.
All that sort of a Rosalind Russell kind of archetype of these really sort of sharp talking dames. So many of these characters had that. When I was growing up in the 60s and 70s, when I was reading comics, so many of the women were always, they were more timid, and they were just kind of waiting for someone to marry them, and they never, they very rarely would come back with sort of a snappy remark if they felt like they'd been insulted. And these women have that. I think one of the differences is because this medium was new, when this medium was new, I think that the people that were working on it were looking to other sources for inspiration. As you said, mythology. I think probably also they were looking at the tone of the movies and the tone of radio shows to kind of give them direction on how to form this medium. The people that have been working in comics for the last 40 years grew up on comics. So they are reinterpreting the sort of language and conventions of comics. I think that's why a lot of these comics in this book seem so fresh because it was new.
You're listening to Words and Pictures on KABU. I'm your host, S.W. Conser. And my guest today is Mike Madrid, the author of Divas, Dames, and Daredevils, a compilation called The Lost Heroines of Golden Age Comics.
Good morning. We are, I am Lynn. I'm here with my friend Will, and we are asking you to call 877-500-5266 and contribute to KABU today. And as you're, if you're listening to this, obviously you are, Divas, Dames, and Daredevils, we have the book for you for a $60 minimum pledge. It is really great, and we were saying it is a fabulous, so it's Will's idea, a fabulous, fabulous Valentine's gift for your Valentine, for your gal who likes, or guy, as the case may be, who likes graphic novels. This show is all about comics and graphic novels. Another prize to tempt you with is the comic collection by Dennis P. Eichhorn. And this is the real-life misadventures of writer Dennis Eichhorn. They've been adapted into comics with the help of dozens of top underground cartoonists, including Portland artists Joe Sacco, David Chelsea, and Jarrah Williams, who have all been on Words and Pictures. You know, there's a minor in comic art now at the University of Oregon, and they should be calling up SW Conser for research material because he has interviewed freaking everybody. And he works hard on this show. It's a true labor of love for him. So show a little love to KABU and SW Conser and Words and Pictures by calling 877-500-5266 and do it right now.
That's right. It's very, very important to show your love and your financial support for Professor Conch and all the knowledge he brings to you. He rages all this knowledge straight to your dome, and he does it for free. I mean, this guy works really hard on his show. He interacts with all these misanthropic cartoonists, and he loves doing it. Because
drags them out of their basement.
He really does, and he pulls them away from their easel, and he brings them onto the airs so you can learn about all these fascinating projects. And graphic arts really are, I mean, we're stimulated by them every single day, whether it's a lousy billboard or a terrific comic book. But you can show your support for KBOO by dialing 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266. We have many great gifts, and we want to thank all the people who've donated food so far, but we also want to thank all the people who've called up and donated money thus far. But there's still more to go. We still need to get these bills paid, and we still need to get the small amount of things that we do here paid for, because everybody works here as a labor of love. Nobody's in it for the money. So please call us at 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KABU.
And speaking of restaurants, we want to thank the restaurants who have donated food today for our hungry volunteers. Bridges Cafe at 2716 Northeast MLK Jr. Boulevard, the Vita Cafe at 3024 Northeast Alberta, and the Side Door at 425 Southeast Washington Street. Thank you very much, restaurants. And thank you very much, publishers, for giving us the wonderful collection of Divas, Dames, and Daredevils. Exterminating Angel Press is always generous to KABU, and we love to have their authors on because they are always incredibly, incredibly interesting people. And today you can get the Divas, Dames, and Daredevils by Mike Madrid. It's a great graphic novel. You can get that for a $60 minimum donation. It's so easy. It's a great gift, and you will be helping us work through. I think we got like about a $300 goal. Let's keep the phones ringing so that can happen. We want you to call. We want you to call right now, 877-500-5266 or kboo.fm, or as Will's been saying all morning, come on down to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. It's great to get a little tour of the station.
You can find out where your money goes. And you can realize how this place is run on just a shoestring budget, but we do need to pay for those shoestrings. So please come on in or call us at 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266. 5266. And it's so easy to relegate the comic book world to juvenilia, but it's not. There are some real geniuses, genuine geniuses, working both in the artistic and the writing field of comic books and graphic novels. And Conch opens up our ears and eyes to this this whole genre. And we have two terrific books, the Dames, Divas, and Daredevils, and then we also have the Icorn book. And
and the Icorn book is autographed, real
autographed,
stuff.
Autographed, exactly. Imagine that,
Dennis
autographed.
Dennis P. Icorn.
Yeah.
And a whole host of characters, all who have been on Words and Pictures, which you can always get the archived versions. Conch usually puts up a longer version of the show. It's a great thing to have. 877-500-5266. You can donate to KABU and support Words and Pictures. Support graphic art, graphic novels and comics. This is the show to do it. It is a truly unique piece on the airwaves today.
It certainly is.
It's 877-500-5266. This is your last chance. You want to get a copy of Divas, Dames, and Daredevils by Mike Madrid. It's six for a $60 donation. And we want to thank Susan in Sandy. But we also want to get right back to this interview.
Thank you, Susan in Sandy.
I'm really interested, Mike, in what inspired you to become the expert that you are in this field. You've written two books now about superheroines, and this is definitely a neglected field. So what particular aspects of it drew you to the subject of superheroines?
You know, as I've been reading comics all my life, and I've always found the female characters more interesting than the men. I'm not even really sure why. People ask me that question all the time. I think part of it is sort of finding that silver lining out of oppression. I think in a lot of those comics that I was reading when I was a kid in the 60s and 70s, the women were presented as not as strong as the men, but on the flip side, they were oftentimes written as more emotional, and they seemed like they had more fully realized personalities to me than a lot of the men. Again, it's like sort of taking the negative thing but finding something good in there.
They're more well-rounded.
They did seem to, I mean, and I'm not talking about the way they were drawn, but their personalities seemed like they were more well-rounded because they were allowed to have more emotions than the men. The men all had to be sort of stalwart and strong and stoic, where the women could actually express kind of more things that you as the reader were probably thinking. And then there were a lot of changes in the 70s when I was reading comics with the women's liberation movement, and I started seeing stronger female characters entering comics, and it was kind of what I'd always wanted to see when that started happening. I was starting to see women presented in the way that I'd always hoped they would be. So as I got older, I got very interested in sort of all areas of popular culture, and it just became a thing with me that I would read comics, but I would look at how they related to other things in popular culture, whether it be music or movies or television or even fashion, and how the evolutions that these female characters went through reflected the various times. And when I was working on the first book, The Supergirls, I found that in many cases, over the course of 70 years, the female characters had undergone more changes and more really reflected the changes in culture more so than a lot of the men. I mean, Batman and Superman, from the 40s to maybe the 70s, they didn't really change all that much because they didn't need to. But someone like Wonder Woman really went through many more changes, many of them not that positive, but they do really reflect the times that we went through in the late 20th century.
I'm looking through the list of chapters that are part of Divas, Dames, and Daredevils, and I'm seeing a lot of character types that sort of fell off the radar during the second half of the 20th century, but they seem to be reemerging a little bit now in the 21st century. And I'll read off the chapter headings. There's Women at War, Mystery Women, Daring Dames, 20th Century Goddesses, and Warriors and Queens.
Yeah, I think that for the last, really since the 60s, we really have had only mainly superheroes that we see in comics, and that's really the Mystery Women chapter. But I think we have seen more of these archetypes that are in this book, but maybe we haven't seen them as much in comics. We've seen them in other places, like Warrior Queens. You know, we've seen, especially in the 90s, we saw a lot of characters on television, like Xena, the warrior princess, that kind of fill that genre.
Well, the book is Divas, Dames, and Daredevils, Lost Heroines of Golden Age Comics. The author is Mike Madrid. Mike, thanks so much for coming into KBOO. This has been great.
Thanks. It's been my pleasure.
And hope that when you come back through town again with a new book that you'll come see us.
Absolutely.
You've been listening to Words and Pictures on KBOO. I'm your host, S.W. Conser. You can find an archived version of this show today later on the KBOO.fm website. Now stay tuned for an afternoon of music on your homegrown Portland radio station.
It's time for the KBOO News at Noon for Thursday, February 13th. I'm Kristen Yount. Yet another toxic spill in the mid-Atlantic coast thanks to the coal industry. This makes the third one in the last 6 weeks. Not to be confused with a chemical spill in West Virginia that compromised the water for 300,000 people, or the coal ash spill in North Carolina, which mired the Dan River, with about 90,000 tons of toxic sludge that crossed the state line into Virginia and beyond, 20 miles away. This sludge contains lead, arsenic, mercury, and radioactive uranium. This is a new spill of 100,000 gallons of coal slurry set loose from a coal processing facility in West Virginia. On Tuesday, a slurry line owned by the company called Patriot Coal broke, and this hundreds of thousands of coal slurry was introduced into the Kanawha River system, which made the water black. In a move to dispel jihadi in Iraq, the Iraqi government began arming Sunni Muslims and tribespeople. Sunni have volunteered to help disperse the al-Qaeda-linked group, the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, even though there is a strong notion that historically Sunni were passed over for Iraqi public sector jobs over Shiite Muslims. These groups were known as Sahwa, and these militia have helped the U.S. in the past during the Iraq conflict. In addition to supplying weapons, the Iraqi state offered their families death benefits, but those volunteers are not being paid. They will expect reparations when the al-Qaeda threat is neutralized. The move became necessary after the Iraqi government lost ground in Ramadi and central Fallujah to the jihadi. In a major blow to auto workers in Chattanooga, Tennessee, United States Congressman Bob Corker announced that if workers reject the union representation, that the Volkswagen company would reward them with a new SUV plant and more jobs. Experts say that this type of economic intimidation could be illegal and violates the spirit of national labor law. Corker's statement baffled the United States Auto Workers Union because it is contrary to what Volkswagen has been communicating to the public, and that is that the union vote would not affect the addition of another product to the plant. Interstate I-84 closed today due to a rock slide that blocked traffic in both eastbound lanes near Hood River, Oregon. Eastbound traffic leaving Portland was rerouted to Highway 14 on the Washington State side via the 205 bridge. A man jumped from his car to relative safety as a boulder the size of two cars crushed his vehicle. Crews are working to clear the road. The final public meeting to address the United States Department of Justice's probe into the use of excessive force by Portland police officers meets tonight. The Albina Ministerial Alliance, or the MAA, was granted friend of the court status in the case of the DOJ versus the City of Portland. This is the last informational meeting being held by the AMA to inform the public about the happenings in the court and how people can get involved in the process. The meeting will be held tonight from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Rosewood Community Center at 16 126 Southeast Stark Street. The website can be found at www.albinaministerialcoalition.org. Thank you so much for listening to the Noon Headlines today. Please tune in every weekday at 5 p.m. for the latest in local, national, and international news brought to you by dedicated volunteers from our Southeast Portland studios.
This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from the Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW. Shocks of Sheba has also been made possible in part with a grant from Hopworks Urban Brewery, committed to creating world-class food and organic beer as sustainably as possible at their carbon-neutral eco-brew pubs. Hopworks is located at Southeast 29th and Powell Boulevard, and Hopworks Bike Bar is at North Williams and Shaver. Available on draft and in bottles throughout Cascadia, information at 503-232-HOPS or hopworksbeer.com. Welcome to Shocks of Sheba.
Say when music hits, you feel no pain.